Well, hi everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Godcast. My name is Father Alex. I'm the Vicar of St. Matthew's Church. I'm the host of the Godcast, and I'm also the author of Our Daily Bread from Argos to the Altar, a Priest Story, which is out now and available in all good bookshops. My guest today on the Godcast is Craig Heap. Craig is a former Commonwealth gold medalist gymnast. He's also appeared at the Summer Olympic Games. He's part of the BBC commentary team for gymnastics, and we'll be very much looking forward to the forthcoming Olympics this year. So do hope you enjoy this interview now with Craig Heap. We'll get going. Well, I'm delighted to say that joining me on the Godcast today is a fellow Burnley lad, well-known gymnast, Olympian, Commonwealth gold medalist, Craig Heap. Craig, it's great to get you on. How are you doing?
I am very good, actually. The sun is shining, so it always puts us in good spirits, don't you think? We've had a bit of a downpour of recent, so the changing seasons, I always think it's a bit of an upbeat, changing our mood. And obviously, if you're in a good mood, that means you can go out and deliver some great stuff.
Yeah. Now, Burnley lad, is Burnley still on, Craig, or have you moved away?
I have emigrated to north of the Tyne. I'm now an unofficial Geordie. I've been here about 20 years. I live in the northeast, but my roots and my family are back in Burnley. My parents are separated. My mum has moved back to the village of Barrow Ford, and she actually lives in her old school, which they converted into houses. So she's literally gone back home. And my dad's still farming, albeit in equestrian centre. Just past Strode Leisure, and he's been there all his life. So yeah, I'm there quite a bit, actually.
We've not lost the accent, that's for sure.
No, I haven't, not at all. And when I say to people, they go, "Where are you from?" I say, "I just live around the corner," and they're like, "Why, hey man, shut it, man! You don't know what you're on about." And I'll go, "Yes, I am from around the corner."
So, have you got happy memories of a childhood in Burnley then?
Yeah, I mean, I think I had a I was very fortunate because growing up on a farm, it was full of adventure. And somebody like me was quite mischievous. And I'm a very practical type person. So for me, that really fueled what I love doing. So, school to me seemed a bit like prison. I just wanted to be at home helping out on the farm, whether it's getting the cows in for milking, driving the tractors is always a favourite. And also riding my quad bike around the land was great. So yeah, I felt quite fortunate that I had that open space as access 24/7.
Now, I've got some family friends who are farmers, and they didn't really need a gymnasium to throw themselves around. They were swinging from trees and off back of tractors and hay baling. So, how did the gymnastics come about, Craig? What was the progression to that?
Well, to be honest, when it was school, I would do anything to get out a lesson. So I pretty much signed up for every sporting club going. I mean, I even did the shot put 1 year, and this skinny, puny little kid turns up. I nearly dislocated my shoulder throwing this shot, but I thought at least I've got a day out of school. But my sister was doing gymnastics, and then I suppose I was a bit of a handful all around, and my mum was fed up with me jumping around the house and round the farm. And so one day I got dragged along to the Thompson Centre, which is not there anymore. It's now St. Peter's, I believe. And I remember going onto the balcony, putting my hands on the top and looking over and being completely amazed by the skills that these young people were doing. It was mainly full of girls, so obviously I wasn't going to join the gymnastic club. You certainly wasn't going to get me in a leotard back then. So my career in gymnastics really started in the farmyard, until one day my mum's like, "Had enough, you're going to kill yourself, get down to the gym with your sister," really. And 18 years later, I ended up at the Olympic Games. So it wasn't really part of my life plan, to get to an Olympic Games at 9 years of age. I was quite late starting gymnastics, and I just wanted to do a few flips to really impress my friends.
Yeah. And was the potential there from a 9 year old, or did it, you know, did you need to be a teenager before you developed?
No, you know, a lot of people talk about talent. There's a really good book by Matthew Syed that talks about the myth of talent, and it tends to be the people that work hard and everybody else that get labeled talented. So yeah, I was probably the worst kid that got into the British team at my age. I always felt like a bit of an outsider, you know, being from Burnley, and you know, a lot of people from down south. I was a bit of a northerner, you know, where's this place, Burnley? Who's this gymnast? We didn't really have a success of British gymnasts at the time from the club. But my coach, who I'm very good friends with now, he's retired. He lives in Seaton Sluice down the road. We had a great friendship. He was a good family friend. And he was one of those that would think outside the box. So if we, you know, the best gyms had the pitted facilities, which was generally a converted swimming pool filled with foam. We didn't have that, but he managed to persuade the powers that be if we could have a squash court. And we built like the world's smallest gym in the squash court, but it enabled me to try more difficult skills. I was a bit rough and ready back then, I think, but I just used to go for the difficulty. And then it was years later when I tidied things up. But I wouldn't say it was until I didn't become British champion till I was about 18. So it's, you know, it was quite a long journey, but I think it's the desire inside which is the test of any performer or anybody that becomes high level in something. It's that hours of practice.
And you know, making a very loose connection, Craig, to faith. I suppose there's got to be a leap of faith with gymnastics, hasn't there? Were you naturally quite a fearless kind of young guy? Or was there a bit of kind of, you know, this standing on the cliff edge, should I, shouldn't I? Just tell us a bit about overcoming those fears.
I think when you're young, you tend to be a bit fearless, don't you? I mean, I've got two young children, and both of them come to my gym here, you know, and they want to throw themselves in the pit, you know, and I have to make them aware of the danger aspect of doing things. I mean, before pits, if I'd be on the high bar, you'd have four of your best friends holding a crash mat, a bit like jumping out of a burning building to catch you, you know, and you'd be, and yeah. Trust me, they're your, you know, best friends in the whole world. You don't want to upset these guys, otherwise they don't run so far with the mat. And I think a lot of it back then is because we didn't have the pits where you could just pretty much land on your head.
Yeah.
Skills took a lot longer to learn because of the fear, where now, you know, the pits are there. You can almost fling yourself into the pit. So, but then at some point, you've got to take it out of the pit and put it onto a hard landing. But I remember we had a really good diving set up at the Thompson Centre, and we used to go swimming on a weekend. And I remember as a kid just jumping off the 3 metre board, tucking in and see how many somersaults I could do. And, you know, like dive bombing into the water, landing on my back. Well, now if I go up to 3 metres, I look off, I'm thinking, oh my word, what am I doing up here, you know? So I do think you become fearful as you get older, maybe because you just become a bit wiser.
Yeah, yeah. And how did it go from being a hobby into being something quite serious? I mean, you know, loads of kids throw themselves off bars and whatnot, but to be kind of make the progression you did, how did that come about, Craig?
Well, I left school, I left boarding high school. I was about 15. I just turned 16 in July, so I was one of the youngest in the year. And I was farming and still doing gymnastics, and I still wasn't convinced at that time. You know, my heart was set on becoming a farmer. I loved it. We realised the centre I was in probably wasn't going to take me to where I wanted to be. So the nearest centre was either Leeds or Manchester. Went to have a look at both. Me and Mike, we decided we'd go to Manchester. It was before the M60 was built. So I still had my responsibilities on the farm. So it was up at 6. I remember in the house at 12:30, I had half an hour to get showered, changed, put some food down my neck, drive to Basnett Street to pick up my coach, We'd drive to Manchester, like race there to get there in an hour. And then I'd train for 6 hours with an hour's break. We used to get back about 10:30 of an evening and then back up at six. I mean, and we did that for 2 years. It was, I would probably say, the most challenging part of my life. I felt I was probably at my lowest mentally. You know, my dad was not happy because all the jobs weren't getting done on the farm because, you know, I wasn't there all day. My coach wasn't very happy, the one that was leading the club in Manchester, because I'd turn up and I'd done a full day's work and I was exhausted for training. So there were some pretty dark times, really. And I think if you look about faith, I'm not probably the most religious person, but there was certainly some dark days there, you know, where I was really low, and I felt trapped and I didn't know where to go. And I always feel sorry for people like that, because, you know, they often don't reach out and it's probably too late, you know, and it's probably something that you deal with quite a lot, I would imagine, at the church. And I always say to people, you know, you should reach out and ask for support. And then I made a decision, I was about 21, to go and train full-time with the British team. That was a tough decision family-wise, because of farming being in the family for generations. And I really felt like I'd let my parents down, my family. Not long after I left, my parents got divorced, and I felt quite a lot of guilt around that, because I think the stress of the farm and that played a part to my parents splitting up. And it was a burden that I think I've carried for quite a long time. Maybe, you know, you say maybe if I'd have been at home, maybe I could have helped things. So that I think that was a driver for me to make sure that when I went there, I was totally committed. You know, I honestly believe deep down I trained harder than anybody else. And that's probably why, you know, I had that driver behind me to make sure I was as successful as I could be. You know, in 98, captaining England to their first team gold medal, I think that gave me a bit of belief that maybe I was good enough to become an Olympian. And 2 years later, representing Great Britain at the Olympics, and then again at the Manchester 2002 Commonwealth.
Yeah, and how did you overcome those mental challenges, Craig? Because, I mean, I've had a real world, other than being a vicar, working in retail. We used to have lots of elite sports people come and talk to us as about management and leadership. And we've had some wonderful speakers. I can remember some outstanding people talking, including Adrian Morehouse, who won an Olympic gold medal. What was the key to getting over those mental challenges? How did you get through that?
I think sometimes you just need to step back and just take stock of the situation. Are you being realistic with your goals and expectations? And I really feel sorry for the generation now, because, you know, I don't think their expectations align with the amount of effort they're willing to put in. You know, you can become quite famous. A lot of people, young people, want to be famous for doing not a lot. They want to make money without, you know, long things worth working for take time, and you need patience. You know, and I always say this to my son, Dex, I'll go, you need to work on your patience, son. You know, it doesn't happen like that, you know. And so I think when I was really down, I would look at where I was and then maybe look at my options. Am I being, you know, unrealistic in my goals? Have I got the skill set to get to an Olympics or whatever? And then maybe look at, why am I failing? What's going wrong? Gymnastics is quite easy to evaluate. You know, we had six pieces of apparatus. Before I was successful at the Commonwealth Games, I was reserved for 94 Commonwealths. I was reserved for 96 Olympics. That was a pretty low point. But after taking a bit of time out and re-evaluating, I realised I had an Achilles heel, and that was the pommel horse. I was good at five pieces of apparatus, but not all six. And I needed to do something about it. And I went back, and I did. I worked extra on that piece of apparatus for 4 years. The coach didn't tell me to do that. You know, my mum, my dad, nobody. It's got to come from inside. And I think we all know that, really. You know, we all know there's something that, you know, it's this manana, I'll do tomorrow. And I've listened to loads of speakers, and actually I'm a good friend of Adrian Morehouse, and he's a great guy. I remember him coming to speak to us at gymnastics, and there was a thing about eat the frog, and it's probably the worst thing you've got to do that day, but actually, you know, get up and get that done, whether it's a difficult situation, whether it's go to the gym, whether it's a task you don't want to do. If you get up and eat the frog, get it out of the way, the rest of the day is a bit of a breeze. So yeah, I think I've always been really good at reflecting, and I'm one of those people, actually, I quite like failure. If I've been successful in a competition, I go back and I don't feel the motivation. Whereas if I've not done well in a competition, I can't wait to get back in the gym, and I can't wait to put it right. That's a real driver for me, you know. And a lot of people say to me, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that. You know, a lot of teachers in school said I would probably not amount to anything. But looking back, they were probably right. I was a terrible student. I'm embarrassed a bit about the way I reacted in school. I wasn't a nice person. But I think it reflects a bit to the chimp paradox, where it's all about survival. You know, I was the only gymnast in a male, you know, an old boys school. So I could have quite easily got bullied. But I chose, you know, I think you develop coping mechanisms. So I became the class clown, and that was a way of dodging getting myself beat up, I think, really. And I think that's where I've developed my sense of humour. You know, I work as a motivational speaker now, and, you know, it's for me, it's all about engagement and laughing and joking, and I want to make people laugh. Well, that's a skill set I got through, you know, a really difficult situation where other young people might not have come out of it so well. So I feel quite blessed. You know, times were tough, but it's really developed me.
Yeah, I think there's some really helpful stuff in there, and I think success is relative, isn't it? But I think in my career, you know, patience was something I was terrible at, and it's kind of a skill I've learnt myself. And the other aspect, the sense of humour, is just so important, isn't it? It gets you through some of the most difficult challenges out there. And what was life like, Craig, going full time? Because it's not like the Premiership academies, is it? When you know, some of these young lads are on like 20 grand a week and they're only like 17. Yeah. Being a professional gymnast at that time, what was that like?
Well, I mean, there was nothing. There was no lottery funding. I just felt that so lucky that somebody at British Gymnastics had faith in me. To so training was free, accommodation was free. So really, you don't need much more. And so instead of getting up at 6 o'clock to milk the cows, I wasn't in the gym till 7 o'clock. So I felt like I was on a holiday camp. I really did. I still got up at 6 o'clock. I was very meticulous. I'm a big planner. I'm still old school. I have a diary now. I write a lot of stuff down. I've got all my training diaries from when I was at the Thompson Centre. I recorded everything. So I used to get up at 6 o'clock, have a cup of coffee, and I'd go to the gym, having looked at my plan ahead, ready, where some of the guys, you know, in the gym at 7:15, they'd literally get up at 7:05, pull the tracksuit bottoms on and go to the gym. Well, for me, I was alert. I was ready to go. And I think that gave me the edge. I mean, you talk about marginal gains. I mean, it was sort of invented by Dale Brailsford in cycling, but marginal gains in sport is something that's evident every day, because you try just to be that little bit better, and all them little things that add up to something quite spectacular. So the fact that I've monitored my training, I was up before everybody else. I was generally the first in the gym. I was generally last to leave. I did more skills than everybody else. I tend to never take holidays, breaks. All of those things on their own probably don't amount to much, but all added together make something quite spectacular. And again, moving to centralized training and totally focus on that, I think that was a real turning point. You know, I mean, yeah. They talk about the 10,000 hour rule of doing something for 10,000 hours to become an expert. That only works if you apply something called purposeful practice, which means it's just not about turning up. You know, loads of people can go to the gym. I go to the gym a bit more often now in the morning, and I see people at the gym and they spend most of the time pouting and or whatever on the phones. And then they go, I don't look any better. And I go, yeah, because you've been in the gym an hour, but you've actually done about 5 minutes work, you know, and that's the same in anything. Whatever you decide to do in your life, you know, it's not just about turning up. It's not just about doing them 10,000 hours. You've really got to apply yourself.
Yeah. And I don't want to pry too much into your private life, Craig, but when the success started to come and you were starting winning trophies and whatever, did the family aspect improve? You know, did they kind of, as you were becoming more successful, did they kind of see the value in why you'd left the farm and why you'd gone for full time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think my mum got married to stay married forever, you know, and I'm a big believer in that. I think it's quite easy now. I'm a very family orientated person. I'd like to think I've got good morals, you know, and I tend to think about other people before myself, you know, and I'm very trusting, which doesn't always work for the best, but I'm the type of person where I feel like if I mistrusted everybody, then what a life would it be? You know, I like to put my faith and trust in people and wait for themselves to let themselves down. And, you know, I don't know. I think you'd probably have to ask my parents, was it worth it? I'm not sure. I'd like to think I did my best for them, and that's all they ever said to me. I mean, I was blessed. I didn't have pushy parents. You know, I've met a lot of pushy parents when I started coaching gymnastics, and even at my centre now, you know, you see them. I get my son into sport and my daughter as much as possible. And they go, oh, are they going to be gymnasts and all this? And I'm like, I've no idea. They've got to choose their own path in life. And that's it, really. You know, support them as much as they can. But, you know, I think the worst thing is trying to live your life through your children. It's pretty sad, to be fair. And I think there's lots of parents guilty out there for that.
Yeah, I've spoken to people in football. I used to be a football ref, Craig, and I used to see kids being hammered by parents from a young age. And it really put me off football, to be honest, in that regard. And spoken to Chris Casper, a Burnley lad who works with Salford, and just said, I just want the kids to enjoy it. I just want the kids to enjoy it. Craig, I want to ask what winning medals did for you. What was the, you know, what did it do for you?
It actually made me very contented. I think that's the word. I think everybody has doubts in their life about what their ability might be. And, you know, as you see from your walk of life, that life isn't fair, you know, and people get taken far too early in their life, and people live a long and rich life, and it doesn't always seem fair at times. And we often chase success But a lot of people, I don't think, realise what success really looks like. You know, for me, success is not about standing on a podium and winning medals. I think for me, success is about being able to work really hard at something and then get rewarded for how you feel that it should be. I mean, yes, I had 2 Commonwealth gold medals, but actually my greatest result was my Olympic Games. I achieved my personal best score and I was 32nd, you know, and I do lots of talks. And people would look out there and they come over at the end and they all want to look at the Commonwealth gold medals. And I say, well, they can only be 1 minute winner. Does that mean everybody else is a failure? You know, and when I went to the Olympics, I'd failed to get there in 96. 6 weeks before the Olympics in Sydney, I broke this hand in 2 places. I didn't think I was going to go. And then I went out and had the best competition of my life. And I realised back then, I'm probably never going to go to another Olympic Games as a performer. And I'm going to enjoy it. And I did. And it was the greatest experience of my life. This lad from Burnley who grew up on a dairy farm, who had no aspiration to stand on a podium wearing gym shoes instead of wellies, you know, at the age of 29, yeah. and being the only person representing Great Britain. You know, I was a winner before I'd even stuck my arm up to compete.
Yeah.
I was representing 65 million people and I was 32nd place in the world. Of how many billion people is that? So when people say to me, 32nd, oh, well, at least you went, in some sort of condescending way. And I'm like, look, don't be sad. It was the greatest thing I've ever done. You know, and I think it's given me the mindset now, which I've transferred into what I do and my own mental health management, is when I go to bed of a night, I think about delivering my personal best every day, which I can do. And I would admit that people at the centre might email and complain and going, you know, your staff, this person looked very miserable today, you know. Well, I said, well, have you never had a bad day? Do you ever, you know, can you honestly put your hand on your heart and say you've knocked it out of the park every single day at work? These are just human beings.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll speak to them and make sure everything's okay at home and, you know, and make sure they don't have too bad a day. But I have very high standards at the centre, you know, and I say to the staff, I don't apologise for high standards. I want everything. I help in the kitchen. It's not a job I do. You know, if you come to Tumble, you'll have me making you a toastie. And as I said to other people who are current gymnasts that want to open a centre, I said, if you open your own gym, people don't care how many medals you've won. They want their cup of coffee as quick as possible and they want the toaster in double quick time. I said, that's what the business is, you know. I said, but I do it for the best of my ability. And I think that's really important. You know, when we meet our maker, you know, and hopefully our family are around us, holding us our hands in that transition period, we can go knowing we've left a mark and we've done our best.
Yeah, some really good life lessons there, Craig, and I really appreciate you being so honest, because I think it's important for people to hear it, particularly in the way society is today. And what about the state of gymnastics now, Craig? I mean, I was just looking when I was putting my questions together. It's had some bad press, hasn't it, over recent years?
It has.
In America and in the UK. What's your assessment of it all now?
I do think, I mean, it is a bit of a hot topic, you know, and I'm quite happy to talk about it because, again, for people that are watching, I want to state this is my opinion as a former gymnast. You know, I'm not speaking on behalf of any other governing body. I think what happened in America was absolutely horrendous. I mean, that was a sexual nature with the doctor. It had been involved for years. And I almost think, you know, it must be very difficult as a parent. And I'm I'm not going to blame parents at all, because I've been outspoken in the past and people saying it's a parent's fault. Are you saying it's a parent's fault? No, I'm not. Not at all. But these people are very good at weaving themselves into family situations. And in the United States, if you become an Olympic champion, which the women's team have been so dominant, it's life-changing. You know, these people become stars overnight. They become millionaires, a bit like you've seen on the sidelines of football matches. These people will almost do anything to turn their kids into stars. And that's when they become really vulnerable, because they're almost seeing the glitz and glamour. I mean, you know, look at the doctor. He's been a doctor for 20 odd years. And this person's wanting to spend all his time with my child because they spot potential. So the parents have been conned into going, well, this person is a doctor, he's high up. And I feel sorry for the parents that have been conned into what's happened, because believing they put the trust in these people. I mean, I recently watched a documentary on ITV. The guy who's in question, Stan Wilde, as a gymnast, I went to York, and somebody said to me, in fact, it was my wife, and she said, I can't believe this guy had domes in his cellar of the gym. And I said, well, back then, that's what happened. Like, there were no funding, you know, for British gymnastics. I went on training camps to a gym in not York, it was in Crewe, and they couldn't afford to put us in hotels. There was a boxing dome above the boxing gym. All the lads took the sleeping bags, and you know, we all went upstairs, and all the lads slept together, you know, and nothing went on as far as I was aware in that time. But then I look back, you know, and I feel really sorry for these people that have been affected, because, you know, the measures have completely changed now. I mean, we're very hot on welfare and stuff like that. I mean, I've always had, when I was a coach, an open viewing policy for coaching. I have now. I mean, we have a centre, but it's not an elite centre. But I've got a balcony where parents are welcome. Whenever I've been coaching in another club, I've always welcomed parents in, because it's not as well about protecting the kids. You've got to protect yourself as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, and the allegations, and I guess this goes, you know, it's in every sport, you know, and probably within the church as well. It's quite historic.
Yeah.
In the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And so times are changing, and I'd like to think we are in a lot better place.
Yeah.
Now, and the people that have been affected, you know, they're very brave to come forward and stand up to these people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, some of the institutional kind of abuse that's gone on in the Church of England, that as well, is absolutely awful. And I'm just grateful that, like you say, you've got to protect yourself, you've got to protect others, that things seem to be improving, Craig. And as we get to the Olympics this year, big year, I guess you're part of the BBC setup again, are you?
Yeah, it's always this nervous wait, like the athletes are waiting for selecting. Same for me with the BBC. I mean, this is another organisation that's changed, because if you think 50 years ago, you would have never had a regional accent,
no,
you know, on the BBC. Yeah. I've been compared to the Johnny Vegas of commentating, and people go, what's wrong with your voice? Are you a heavy smoker? Right? No, I just sound like this all the time. But yes, I've covered Olympics since 2012, and I absolutely love it. It's probably the one of the perks, I would say, about my gymnastic career. You know, and again, I never thought that I'd be getting to travel the world and cover these events for the BBC. And I really think we've got a good team this time. I mean, I'm from a generation of not winning medals, you know, just to go and turn up. It's credit to the system. Yes, I know the system's got its flaws, and you know that's been evident through all these channels. But I'd like to give a shout out. We have got some fantastic coaches in Britain, and not abusive coaches, you know, that have been really successful. Max Whitlock has won Olympic gold medals. He's got the greatest coach relationship going. My coach from Burnley lives down the road. I take him out every year. He comes round for Christmas dinner. We've got a great relationship. Who's been a mentor? There's thousands of great coaches out there which have got us into, you know, a nation in gymnastics. And if you look at sports that have really done well in the last decade, gymnastics has been one of those. You know, I mean, Max Whitlock will be going for his fourth Olympic Games, fourth Olympic medal, third gold medal potentially on the pomelos. Unfortunately, the Gadarova twins, they're injured, and I'm not sure Jess Gadarova's going to come back in time. But you've got Becky Downey, who's in her 30s now. She was at the Olympics in 2012. I mean, she's really proven that female gymnastics can be done at an older age, well into the 30s. I mean, you've got the Russian gymnast, Shusha Vitina, originally from Russia, represented Germany, and now, I mean, she's done 7-8 Olympic Games in her 40s. And you think, wow, yeah, how is this woman going? You know, I mean, she's only a few years younger than me. I'm in my 50s. And the thought of me going to the Olympic Games, it would be crown green bowling all the way.
Well, I was going to say, it's only 4 years away, Craig. Get yourself in tip-top shape.
Yeah, and you've got Simone Biles coming back. Yeah. I mean, she had an absolute mare with this mental block in Brazil. I mean, she's really pushed the boundaries of gymnastics. I mean, she's a bit of, chalk and cheese. You love her or hate her. You've got the real stalwarts of gymnastics that like the Grace and the Beauty, who are not a big fan of the Russians. The Americans, and certainly her style of gymnastics. But I love her. I think she's right up there. She's probably got 6 new moves, you know, and as a female athlete, so powerful. And it's amazing. So I'm super excited to get to Paris and cover the success of the British team.
Well, Craig, it's been lovely talking to you. It's been lovely having a Burnley lad on. You're a guy that's full of enthusiasm for everything you do. I think you're a great inspiration. I think you're a great model to people in Burnley as well. You know, we always, Burnley folk are very proud of people, you know, and you're up there with the Jimmy Andersons and, you know, and Jay Rodriguez. So thanks for that. And thanks so much for coming on the Godcast. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And to all your listeners that tune in, I wish you all the very best. And remember, every day is not a holiday. You will have tough times. You know, surround yourself with positive people. That's key, you know, and just keep the faith.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.